Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. From maybe that first track they ever brought, right through to one track that they would like to pass on but might give hope for the future. My guest this week is Andrea Begley, visually impaired Irish singer-songwriter and disability advocate, who in 2013 entered the BBC talent show The Voice and, after wowing the coaches at the blind auditions, went on to be crowned winner of the second series of The Voice UK. Hello, Andrea, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, Toby. I'm very delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, as a singer-songwriter yourself, was it a tricky task selecting your tracks?
It actually was a really tricky task, I have to say. I mean, I absolutely love music, that goes without saying. So to try and whittle down my favourite songs and songs that mean something to me throughout my life was certainly a challenge. I'm sure I'll look back and say, oh, I should have picked that one or whatever. But, you know, you have to draw the line somewhere. So I've made the choices I've made and I'm happy with them. So we'll see what everyone thinks.
Well, your first track, Andrea, takes you back to school days and learning this particular track at the age of 11 for a Children in Need event. Would you be able to paint me a picture of what life was like for you back then?
Yeah, so as you can imagine, Toby, music was a big, big part of my life from a very, very early age, from those early school days, being part of the school choir, the local church choir. And obviously at that age as well, I was first developing my visual impairment. So I developed cataracts and glaucoma from about the age of 5, from juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. And music, I always found, was, you know, a great sense of escapism and joy and all things really, I suppose, equal in terms of things I could participate in. You know, obviously sports, especially contact sports, were definitely out the window in those early days. So music was a natural sort of choice for me anyway, because of my family background in music. So yeah, school was definitely where I got my initial disciplining, and if you like, in terms of learning about songs, learning lyrics, melodies. And this particular song means a lot to me, and it's probably one of the first songs I remember learning from beginning to end and performing. That's not to say there weren't loads of others, but in terms of me doing something solo on my own, this is one of the earliest songs I can remember performing publicly on my own.
And the track that you have chosen is Wonder Child by Mary Black, a fantastic Irish folk singer. And I wondered, what was it like performing this song on stage for that Children in Need event?
It was such a wonderful opportunity. I don't think I expected it to happen, really. I'd taken part in a local competition in one of my local shopping centres, actually, and it was in conjunction with Children in Need. And then that then translated into me going to perform in the Ulster Hall, which is an iconic venue in Northern Ireland. And it was my first really public performance in front of a full crowd and a large crowd. And it was put through BBC Radio Ulster. So it was a very nerve-wracking, but a very exciting experience going there and getting to experience a dressing room and just all the novelty of performing for the first time. It was really special. And I think this song will always hold a special place in my heart, not least because of its amazing melody. And of course, the fact that it's performed by Mary Black, one of the icons of Irish folk music.
He's your wonder child, and my dreams come.
The wonderful voice of Mary Black there and Wonder Child. Andrea, for your next track is one by your aunt, who's probably, I think, known as the Queen of Country Music in Northern Ireland. I wondered, when you were starting out as a singer-songwriter, how much of an inspiration was your Aunt Philomena for you?
Oh, she was absolutely huge. As I mentioned earlier, music's been a massive part of my family, and it's in the genes, so to speak, and not least because of my aunt, really. She will be, hopefully, all things going well, celebrating 60 years here in the music business next year. And she really is a legend in her own right. She's performed all over the place, from Ireland, UK, all over to Nashville and back again and in other parts of Europe. So I really do look up to her, I suppose, success, but also her ability and longevity, especially as a female in the music business. You know, it's a challenging business at the best of times. So I, from a very young age, was very much taken with her ability to be down to earth with the audience, but also to encapsulate something special when she performed, in terms of her energy and just ability to pick the right kind of songs and connect with the audience. And she still does that right up to this day. And I've been so lucky in recent years, especially after my successes on TV and that we've been able to perform together and tour together, which has been really special from a family perspective as well as a musical perspective.
And your aunt has a great rapport with the audience. I saw a clip of her performing on The Late Late Show, and it was quite funny to see that clip. And I wondered if seeing her interact with her audience, whether that sort of helped you at all when you're on stage.
Oh, absolutely. Certainly when we've been out touring together, and even in meeting and greeting people afterwards and signing albums, or, you know, getting a photo with fans, you know, that easy style and her ability to just be on the level with everyone, that's really what's helped her to sustain her success over the years. And she's made a few appearances on the Late Late Show as well, and she got awarded last year with a Country Music's Legends Award. So she's very well thought of by her audience, and that's a testament, I think, to just how well she's connected with people over the years.
And what does she think of your career?
Oh yeah, she's been very supportive, and she's all like, obviously been there to kind of direct me in terms of being on tour and things like that. And it's been really helpful to have someone who's been there, done that, and got the t-shirt, so to speak. So I look forward to her big celebration coming up next year as well, and joining with her in that too.
And which one of your aunt's tracks have you chosen, and why have you chosen it?
Well, I've chosen the song Blanket on the Ground, which was originally performed by Billie Jo Spears, but my aunt covered it a number of years ago, and it became a very, very big successful record for her here in Ireland and in the UK. And she was also quite good friends with Billie Jo Spears as well, and toured with her in recent years before, unfortunately, she passed away. But the song is just one that I associate so much with my aunt, and, you know, good happy times going to see her in perform in concert or at a dance, right from a very young age, going to watch her perform. So that's why I've chosen this song.
Come and look out through the window. That big old moon is shining down. Tell me now, don't it remind you of the blanket on the ground?
Blanket on the Ground by your Aunt Philomena there. And as I say, royal queen of country music, not only in Northern Ireland and Ireland, but also across the world as well. Your next track, Andrea, is from a Katie Tunstall CD that I think you were given at the age of 19. And I wondered what life was like for you at that age of 19, and how you may have seen your life sort of progressing at that stage.
Oh, that's a really interesting question. It was quite a I suppose a period of transition in my life. I was really in the early stages of university. So I had gone to Queen's in Belfast at the age of 18. And as you say, when I turned 19, I received the Katie Tunstall album as a present. And at that stage, I absolutely just fell in love with the music, loved the energy of it, loved Katie Tunstall's voice and her songwriting style and the whole way that the album was delivered. It was just my type of thing. And I really, really, there was just something about it I was so connected to. And at that stage, really, I was still very much studying, trying to get to grips with a law degree and the challenges that that presented with having a significant sight loss condition. So it was certainly a challenging time in my life, but an interesting time as well. And the music, as ever, was there as a big sort of background comfort and source of inspiration. I suppose it set really in place the catalyst for what came a couple of years later when I started to learn the guitar and write songs. I had always had ambitions to songwrite, but never quite managed to get around to it, and really not necessarily knowing where to start, I suppose. And I played the piano at a young age, but I took up the guitar in my early 20s, and that then connected me into a whole group of musicians in Belfast where I was based for uni, and really started the ball rolling on the next stage of my music journey.
You say that your music took a different journey at that stage, from playing the piano to picking up the guitar. And I wondered what it was like learning the guitar.
Yeah, so I started learning the guitar in my early 20s, and it definitely was a challenge. I was very fortunate to have a very patient teacher in who's now my good friend, Mark. And initially, I suppose one of the biggest challenges was trying to make the lessons accessible. So a lot of the time now, people rely on guitar tabs and visual aids that they read online, or you know, maybe in a book, old school music book, and that obviously wasn't possible for me. So all my lessons I recorded and tried to pick things up that way. And I would say for the first number of months, I really felt like I was making zero headway with it, and just wasn't getting any kind of sound out of the guitar at all. Now, all these years later, I certainly do not claim to be a great guitarist by any stretch of the imagination, but I did manage to eventually get something out of it that enabled me to be able to play a little and to be able to use it as a source of writing inspiration for melodies. And that's really what I wanted to achieve from it. I never set out to be a great guitarist, so to speak. My main instrument is my vocals, and it always will be. But I do enjoy playing, and obviously during the last 12 months or so, I've had plenty of time to get my practice in, because we've been all locked down.
And Katie Tunstall's music has, it's, I would say, probably quite guitar based in a way. What is the track that you've chosen from this album, and why have you chosen it?
Yeah, very much so. So, I mean, Katie Tunstall's guitar playing skills are excellent, and, you know, her ability to use the loop pedal and work with all those different things is amazing. Like, I'm certainly not anywhere near that level, but I do find her songs really do touch my soul, so to speak. And this song in particular, I like because it just has a great energy to it. It's very cool. You know, it has that sort of ability to be quite old school in its sound, but also very modern at the same time. And I think it really shows off her unique vocal style really, really well. And just, it's just so catchy, and you can't help but sing along to it. So the track is Black Horse on a Cherry Tree.
2, 3, 4. Ooh. 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 Well, my heart knows it better than I know myself, so I'm gonna let it do all the talking. Ooh.
Katie Tunstall there, and Black Horse and a Cherry Tree, and perhaps an inspirational track for you there, Andrea. Now we come to the track that marks your time when you took part in the TV show The Voice back in 2013. What made you want to take part in the show, as it was, you know, quite a good TV show? And what was it like actually being part of it?
Yes, so being part of The Voice really happened by accident more so than design. I hadn't necessarily planned to go on to any TV show, really. Circumstances just sort of came my way. So As I mentioned, I'd made a lot of good connections with musicians and going to open mic nights in Belfast, where I'd been living for university. And then also afterwards, I started working for the government there. So I continued to live in Belfast and pursue my music and connect with other musicians. And one of which ran an open mic night to where the producers of The Voice made contact and asked, you know, do you know anyone who would regularly come to your open mic that might be interested in a preliminary audition for The Voice? And they mentioned my name and sent me all the information. And at the time, I sort of thought, oh, I don't know if this is for me or not. But on a bit of reflection, I thought, well, I'll go. It's only a very initial, you know, audition and a chat, and we'll see if anything sticks. So I went along and I turned up very, very late. I misread the time on the email and I thought it said 8:45 in the evening and it was 8:45 in the morning. So when I turned up, all the producers and the team were packing up and going for their dinner because they'd had a very long day. And I really thought, oh no, sure, look, it's not meant to be, that's fine, don't worry about it. And they were very insistent that they would still speak to me. And I thought, oh, this is just them trying to be nice to me. But lo and behold, a number of months later, I found myself performing in front of the coaches themselves in a Salford Studios in Manchester. And again, it was just such an amazing experience, very, very surreal. And even more so whenever I found out that both Tom Jones and the Danny O'Donoghue from the script had turned their chairs around and wanted to choose me as their contestant. So I ended up going with Danny as my coach for the show. And yes, we had a very wonderful time working together. And just that whole experience with The Voice was really so exciting and such a fun time in my life.
Yeah, because I watched on YouTube last night where you did your audition and both Danny and Tom turned round, and I think there was a bit of a tussle as to who was going to become your coach. Did you obviously learn quite a lot from the process of being part of that show?
Yeah, you really do. Even just from the very basic things of, you know, meeting people like vocal coaches, choreographers, even what actually goes on behind television, which was obviously a new phenomenon for me. I'd been involved very briefly in TV things before, but nothing to the extent of a full-scale national television show like that was going out live. Some of it was pre-recorded, but most of the last number of shows were all live. So there's just such a buzz and excitement and, it, you know, nice to even meet other fellow singers and see the different paths that have brought people to the show. Some people were very experienced. Some people like myself were very unexperienced, really. You know, I was quite unexperienced. Some folks were performing regularly on the West End and things like that. So by that standard, I was quite a novice, but I really enjoyed the experience from beginning to end. It was tiring at times, very, very long days with recording and that, but it definitely was a real thrill.
Did you feel there was a lot of pressure during The Voice, and obviously especially afterwards when you won, being a singer-songwriter who just happened to be blind?
I think, yeah, to a degree. Unfortunately, I still feel that visually impaired people and people with a disability in general are still, sadly, a bit of an anomaly when it comes to being seen in mainstream media. So whereas the focus should always be on your abilities or your talents or the reason why you're there, there can be a bit of a distraction around the fact that you have a condition that I suppose just purely on the basis of it's something people don't see every day and they're not expecting it. It does have limitations in regards to getting around the stage, performance. You know, you're not going to be doing cartwheels across the stage anytime soon, although some people might, but you know, it has its limitations from that perspective. But then, you know, I suppose that what became my trump card really was my ability to connect emotionally to songs, which I think was really what helped me connect with the audience out there, and that may have been something that was a bit easier for me to do because I had to focus on the vocal side of things and the sort of razzmatazz and the distraction of, you know, dancing or whatever. It was never really going to be possible for me. So it had to be more about the emotion of the song and delivering it properly, and that's what I focused on. So in the end up, I guess that's maybe why it did connect with the audience, who knows, but I do know I enjoyed the experience. And yeah, there are challenges when you're visually impaired as a singer or musician, you know, even just the basics of navigating the stage and getting around a venue. But you know, we're well used to dealing with those challenges no matter what we do in life as visually impaired people. So there's always a way around these things.
Yeah, no, definitely so. I just wondered if you felt, you know, because you were the first visually impaired person to be part of that show and part of a talent show, whether there was a lot of pressure or a lot of press interest, and maybe perhaps a bit more than there would be for somebody else.
I think there probably was, yeah. There was a certain amount of that. Again, probably down to the fact that it just was such a novel thing. And sadly, even still, I'd imagine if I was on The Voice this year or BGT or something else, it would still probably be a bit of a focal point. It's good in one sense because it registers the whole thing with people, and it makes them realise that someone with a disability can participate in a show like that as much as anyone else. I suppose we're just not at the stage yet in life where vision impairment or other disabilities are part and parcel of who we are, rather than headline news, if you like. You know, it is important that people do know about it, understand it, and you know, if there's one positive to come out of it, I'd like to think that my appearance on the show raised a little bit of awareness, even to simple things. I know a lot of people queried about how I use social media and things. You know, we regularly get those kind of questions as blind people anyway, but you know, there's not much knowledge out there about assistive technology, and why would there be? Just people don't know because they don't encounter it. So it's good to get that onto people's radar. And when it is, I think people are a lot more accepting and understanding as well.
And the track that takes you back to those blind auditions for The Voice is Angel by Sarah McLachlan. When you hear this track, what memories come back to you?
All sorts of memories. I've been singing this song for a lifetime anyway, and I chose it to do as my audition song for the show because I love the song. It's such a haunting melody, and I believe it really helped me to show off my voice in that way. And it has that sort of ethereal feel to it, which I really like in songs. And when I performed it initially in the blind auditions, I was obviously very, very nervous. But as I grew in confidence across the show and when it came to the final, I have really particularly fond memories that night of performing it. And I just thought, you know, whatever happens at the end of this, whatever the outcome, I really feel I can walk away from that feeling like I gave it my all and gave it a great performance. And there's really no other song I would have wanted to perform than this one, because it just it really does, I feel, it capture the best emotive qualities in my vocal. And the song itself, really, it just speaks for itself. It's a beautiful song, and it'll always be a favourite.
All your time waiting for that second chance.
Angel by Sarah McLachlan there, and memories of The Voice for you, Andrea. Your next track is a classic Billy Joel tune, and one which tells a really good story and has fantastic lyrics in it. When you heard this track for the first time, what did you think of it, and what do you think of it now?
It's funny, this song was first introduced to me by my cousin many, many years ago. I think he was like an older teenager at the time, and I was probably still only maybe 10 or 11. And I distinctly remember listening to it and thinking, oh yeah, it is good. It sounds like a nice song, and I like the chorus. But at that age, I really didn't appreciate just how great a song it is. And it's only now, with, you know, the benefit of a bit of maturity and being a bit older, that you realise just what an amazing piece of songwriting it is. It's a perfect blend of great lyrics, a great melody, a very relatable story. especially as a musician, you know, you can connect a lot to what's in there. And Billy Joel is just such a great songwriter and a great performer. Unfortunately, I haven't had the chance to see him perform in concert, but his back catalogue is let's just say you would, as a fellow singer and songwriter, you would be rather envious. But yeah, he's great, and you know, this song will always be such a brilliant sing along, but also a song with a real good story to it. And I think if you were ever trying to write a classic song, you would be wanting all the ingredients that's in this one.
And in your songs, do you sort of paint a picture of your life, or is it of other people's lives, just observations that you make and things that you react to?
Yeah, probably a mixture. Sort of autobiographical in a sense. Most songwriters probably, whether they want to admit it or not, you know, use a lot of their own experiences, especially heartache and heartbreak usually gets in there. And you know, sometimes you don't have to be even really talking about stuff that you yourself have experienced. It can be observation as well. And you know, I recently wrote a song which I dedicated to a lot of friends and family members who were getting married recently. And you know, I felt like it was a nice feeling and a nice theme, if you like, to be able to talk about. It's not one I self-relate to at all, but it is something that, you know, I think that's a real skill too, you know, being able to see around you what emotions and themes that even, you know, like, we all know about some of the writing, songwriting that's went on during the years, you know, observing what goes on in society around us. You know, music and songwriting is such a great tool to be able to express so many different things. But yeah, it's very enjoyable. It can be frustrating sometimes though, when you get a good idea for a song in your head and then you just can't quite crack the last little bit of it. But sometimes you just have to take a break and go away and come back and finish it off.
Sing us a song, you're the piano man. Sing us a song tonight. Well, we're all in the mood for a melody, and you've got us.
The Piano Man there by Billy Joel, and a fantastic track which paints a really good picture, as we say, and I think a track that lots of people know and can sing along to as well. Andrea, your next track is one that gets you up on the dance floor, and it's one by Bruno Mars. What is it about this particular track that gets you up on the dance floor?
Well, everybody likes a little boogie on the dance floor now and again, and I love all genres of music. And again, I've tried to reflect as many varieties as I can in the songs that I've chosen, and certainly everybody likes something a bit upbeat to put a smile on your face. Generally, I tend to sing quite a lot of emotional ballad songs. I have some upbeat songs, but generally they do tend to be more on that front. But as a listener and as just someone who likes to go out and have a good time with my friends and family, I really do turn to I suppose Motown and that type of genre, but also more recently to music by artists like Bruno Mars, who I've had the privilege of seeing in concert a couple of times. And just really, this song encapsulates good energy, good vibes, feel good factor, and sharing good happy memories with friends. And my sister in particular, we went to the British summertime concerts that are run in Hyde Park, well, were until the pandemic hit a couple of years ago, and we had the opportunity to go and see Bruno Mars. It was a July time a couple of years past, and just a lovely evening. And I remember just, you know, being there and joining with the crowd and everybody having a good time and singing along. And yeah, it's just this kind of song, and this song in particular, reminds me of that time and good times with friends and my sister too.
Do you think that one of your tracks could be taken up and turned into a dance anthem or something like that?
Well, I've never thought of that. That might be quite an interesting prospect, have I? No, I don't know. You never know. Maybe there's a prospective DJ out there who'll turn one of my
heartbreak ballads into the next dance floor classic. You never know. But yeah, I'm sure that would be quite cool if someone wanted to do that. You just don't know. The good thing about putting your music out there now, especially digitally, is it's available to absolutely everybody all over the world. And you just never know what way it could be remixed or what people might think to do with it. So who knows what's around the corner. Players!
Bruno Mars there and 24 Karat Magic, a great track to get up on the dance floor and dance to. Andrea, we now come to your final track, the one that you would like to pass on that might give people hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
So the track that I've chosen for this is Dreams, and it's by the Cranberries. It's an Irish band. The lead singer, Dolores O'Riordan, unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago at a young age. But this song, I think for me, there's something so uplifting about it. And it's really all in the melody, but it's also in the bass line. It's got a great sort of driving sound to it. And I don't mean driving as in car driving. I just mean more in the sense of tempo. And it's just, for me, the melody, the lyrics encapsulates the spirit of hope. And, you know, we've all had our dreams in one sense or another. Probably, I wouldn't say taken away by the pandemic by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly the pandemic, I think, has given us all an altered awareness about things. And, you know, things are and have changed really irrevocably. The future is going to be different after this pandemic, and I think it has made us all stop and reflect about what is it we really want from life, whether that be career, relationship. You know, what are our hopes and dreams for the future? And, you know, some of us have found that we're very much on course with the dreams that we have. Some of us have maybe found that those dreams have changed a little bit in light of what's happened. So this song for me is that spirit of hope and, you know, our ability. Nothing can hold us back from having our dreams and pursuing them in one shape or form. And that's what this song's all about.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Andrea Begley, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
No problem, Toby. It's been an absolute pleasure.